What is up with LSU baseball? Their first double-digit loss of the season to an in-state rival. Even the players are saying, embarrassing. Well, it wasn't embarrassing for one renowned trainer from New Orleans and LSU as his filly won the Kentucky Oaks. We'll talk to that trainer as well as a former LSU quarterback whose daughter is making strides on the softball pitch for LSU. All these stories and more today, Wednesday, May the 8th, 2019.
Pitch swung on a line. There's a base at the right field. Here comes Maben. Here comes the Bruce throw home, and he's going to be saved. He's saved. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
Rebound comes down to Millsap. He attacks the rim, leans in on Tanner. Banker, no good. In from the weak side. 23-point lead for Denver, their big lead of the night.
First pitch from McHugh, and he drives this one right field. That could be gone, and it is. Grand slam for Ryan O'Hearn. And Kansas City now leads 6-0 on that big blow. Boy, sitting on something on that first pitch. Waited back and sent it over the wall in right field.
And of the Tigers in baseball, the Astros, or the 76ers and Trailblazers in the NBA, wasn't a very good night for you. No, it wasn't. Welcome. How are you? Hump day, Wednesday. Great to be with you. CD back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studio, spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons. He'll take your phone calls at 337-706-0111. You can always email me, askjordy@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at JHS1037. We'd love to hear your thoughts, your input, your praise, your criticisms, whatever it may be. Busy show. We got kind of a eclectic show for you today. We're actually going to talk about a sport that's growing leaps and bounds, and that is the sport of rugby. There's professional rugby in New Orleans, and they've got the match of the year coming up this weekend. We'll talk to a significant member of the New Orleans Gold coming up in the program. We'll talk to a former LSU quarterback who, when he retired, had a bunch of firsts beside his name in the LSU history books, but his daughter's even better. His daughter just became an all-SEC freshman team member in the SEC for softball. We'll talk with Jeff Wickersham coming up in hour number two. And fresh off winning the Kentucky Oaks with Serengeti Empress, trainer extraordinaire from New Orleans, graduated from LSU, Tom Amos will join us. And looking forward to talking to him. He's quite the character and quite the trainer. So that's what we have in store for you and yours today. Paul Maneri kind of said it best last night in summing up the LSU-Louisiana Tech debacle. You heard it earlier in the tease, but I think it's worth playing one more time. Here's Paul Maneri after his team just got embarrassed by the Bulldogs.
Best thing for us to do is just to shake this one off and get ready to go to Arkansas and you know, fortunately, it only counts as one game, so just nothing really went right tonight. It was just a bad game all the way around, so give credit to Louisiana Tech. They got a good ball club.
Where do we begin? The woes of LSU baseball continues. They suffered their third consecutive loss, and this one was ugly early. 12-1, a beatdown by Louisiana Tech. LSU only gets three hits and one run off of Tech left-hander Logan Robbins in 6 2/3 innings. Meanwhile, Tech got on the board early, got on the board often. I've never heard of some of these guys that pitched for LSU. Sorry, but Rye Gunner, Aaron George, wow. Wow. I don't know. Bulldogs get two runs on three hits in the first. Another error by shortstop Josh Smith. His third costly error in as many games. A two-out RBI single made it 2-0. They get two more runs on four hits in the third, and it just starts to steamroll and steamroll and steamroll. I don't know. Pulmonary said his main guys are tired and they needed rest. He couldn't use Matthew Beck or Trent Vetmeyer or Todd Peterson or Zach Hess or Devin Fontenot. You just can't run those guys into the ground. Okay, I got you. Statement may be true, but how do you explain LSU only scoring one run on four hits and committing two costly errors? Josh Smith came out and said this, and this is interesting to me. We kind of came out sluggish. That was a tough one. It was kind of embarrassing, honestly. We didn't come ready to play today. Really? So what's your excuse? School is over. No more exams. All you're doing is playing baseball. You just suffered back-to-back losses to Ole Miss. One, when you had a great comeback to tie it up in nine, send it to extra innings, and you give up four runs and lose the ball game. How are you not ready? How are you not just so ticked off that you don't come out ready to play? Now, that is a combination of several things. One, I love Paul Mainieri. I really do. But, Paul, you got to get angry. You got to throw chairs or break a bat or do something. Too nice. Way too nice. Number two, and this is no offense to Clay Moffitt, but Clay Moffitt's your leader? Your emotional leader? A guy coming out of the bullpen? No. No, there's a lack of leadership. There's a lack of toughness. There's a lack of accountability within that locker room. That's all I can say. Something is amiss. I'm not there every day, but something obviously is amiss. When you come out and say, we didn't come out ready to play, we were sluggish. Really? Wow. I don't get it. So they're flying as we speak. They got to put that embarrassing loss behind them and hit the reset button very, very quickly. They got Arkansas coming on Thursday. 6:30 first pitch, 6 o'clock pregame show right here on 103.7 The Game. So as disappointing and as concerning as the loss was last night, yeah, you can turn things around. Easier said than done. Character builder, yeah. We'll see what this team is, but right now it's been a disappointment. But it's nothing that can't be remedied and fixed. Just get one good start. It's as easy as saying Mikhail Hilary goes out there and goes seven innings, maybe gives up a run. Then you turn the ball over to your bullpen. Just takes one win to build off of. So we shall see. We shall see. But trouble. And they've got to do a lot of soul searching, man. A lot of soul searching because that's just unacceptable. And congratulations to Tech. They didn't. Look, we talked with Lane Burrow yesterday. They don't even have a field. They know what adversity is. They've been traveling forever. They got to go play home games at UL Monroe. So don't tell me that they're sluggish. If a team ever deserves to be sluggish, it's them. But no, they took the fight to LSU. They wanted it more. I don't know. LSU, maybe LSU's just fat and happy, content. Man, you got to crack the whip on that. Got to crack the whip. And I'm just here to tell you right here, right now, when this season comes to an end, there are going to be some changes made on that staff. I can promise you there'll be some changes made. And they're under the scrutinizing eye of LSU fans, the administration, and everything. I'm not saying that Paul Mainieri's getting fired. That's not going to happen. No. But that country club environment got to change. These guys got to get hungry. They got to get desperate. They got to get ticked off. Or this season's going to come to a real, real quick halt. That was a damaging loss last night. Damaging. But again, if they can somehow figure out a way and get a win Thursday and then go from there, well, they can turn it around. That's what's crazy about baseball. You can turn it around. But needless to say, that was embarrassing and unacceptable on so many fronts. You cannot tell me that you're sluggish and you didn't come ready to play. No. That's not acceptable in any way, shape, or form. Ed Orgeron hit the speaking circuit with the coach's caravan in Monroe. We'll recap that and much, much more. We're just rolling. It's a great day. It's a great Wednesday. Thanks so much for tuning us in. And we'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Congrats, Tech. LSU, embarrassing. Embarrassing.
Topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. DC's Little Capital X on I-10, Henderson Cecilia exit in Bro Bridge. Frankie's got a little bit of everything for everyone. Lots of gift items to go along with every type of chip and dip and snack and drink you could ever imagine. And then some. And that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. That cheeseburger's some kind of good. DC's Little Capital Exxon. I-10, the Henderson Cecilia exit in Bro Bridge. It's my go-to stop. Give it a shot. You're going to love it. DC's Little Capital Exxon. LSU's coaches caravan back up again. First day it was Shreveport. Last night it was Monroe. And Ed Orgeron was there. Kevin Falk, Justin Vincent. It's all about Coach O. And the thing that brought out the biggest thing I got out of it was this. Joe Brady is the coach du jour. He is the one that everybody is high and mighty about. And man, I hope it works out. I really, really do. Coach O went as far to say that Joe Brady does many tasks that an offensive coordinator would normally do. And he said, if something should happen to Steve Ensminger, whatever, that he would not hesitate to make Brady a fill-in offensive coordinator and maybe even keep the job permanently. So this is kind of an audition for Joe Brady. If Joe Brady accomplishes what we all as LSU football fans hopes he accomplishes, and that is basically an offense that keeps the defense guessing. You know what I mean? It kind of, how many years have you sat in the stands and watched an LSU football game or watched it on television and the offense comes up to the line of scrimmage and you go, oh, that's going to be a runoff tackle. Or that's going to be a draw play. Or that's going to be, they're going to try and throw the ball to that guy because that's the only wide receiver that's out there on 3rd and 10. Because they got a max protect and blah, blah, blah. In other words, very predictable. I think LSU fans want unpredictability. Yeah, and with that comes 3, 4, 5 wide receiver sets and throwing the ball to the running back, coming out of the backfield, finding that tight end, running that RPO, all those things to keep a defense guessing, to keep them honest so they can't stack the box like they've done for years and years and years and dare, beg, plead LSU to throw the football. So Joe Brady has the opportunity. Steve Ensminger's getting up there. Remember, Steve Ensminger said he didn't want the job. And basically, Ed Orgeron just said, you're doing it. And he's grasped it. He's taken it. And he's enthusiastically getting with it. No question. But he said, look, I want to run this run-pass option thing, and I need your help, Joe Brady. Come on. Let's work together. Let's help each other out. So that's good. It's all about trust, right? It's all about trust. And so many times, Ed Orgeron talks about a smooth staff, one where everybody knows their exact roles and they trust each other. That just kind of shows you how bad the Matt Canada situation was. Man, there was tension in that coaching staff. And Ed Orgeron, again, made that hire because that was part of his pitch to get the gig from LSU. I'm going to go out there and get the best offensive coordinator out there. Well, he couldn't get Lane Kiffin, so he went for what he thought was number two in Matt Canada. And maybe Matt Canada is great at this. It just didn't work. It didn't blend. These were two guys, North Pole, South Pole, as far as their agreement on how things should be done. Now O's got his guy in Ensminger. And he's bringing in somebody to help. And again, you bring in that Saints playbook. Man, I trust Sean Payton. I've seen it too many times. And the results speak for themselves. Each and every year, year in, year out, the Saints are either the number one offensive team in the NFL or they're in the top 3 or 4 every single year. Sean Payton's a genius with that stuff. He finds the mismatch. He takes advantage of it. And that's what LSU's got to do. That's what they have to do. From the Acadiana area, Coach O touched on, and Tommy Moffitt, the strength and conditioning coach, talked about Tyler Shelvin. And his weight is always a huge topic at this time of the year. Tommy Moffitt said he's dropped 60 pounds. Now, look. When you weigh as much as he did, losing 60 is not that big of a deal. But still, it is. It is. Now, can he lose the next 30 and maintain his strength? It's all about being in condition. You carry that much weight, it's hard to stay in shape. Right? It's hard to stay in shape. So, good news for Tyler Shelvin. Coach O reiterated he wanted Joe Burrow to run more this season. Couldn't do it last year because Miles Brennan was hurt. So you didn't really have a backup quarterback. Brennan's healthy. Joe Burrow's going to run a little bit more. As you saw toward the end of the season when he was very, very effective. Very effective. Coach O was so thankful when he talked about Rashard Lawrence and Braden Fehoko returning to that defensive line. It's not a very deep defensive line from a experience, skill position perspective. So those two coming back, man, if they didn't, there'd be some major holes to fill at that position. So Ed O thrilled that they came back. Thrilled. So all in all, again, it's It's a positive nature. You know, you've got chatter out there at all times. Every day of the week, every week of the year when it comes to LSU football in this part of the world. It's always chatter. People want to know. That's what makes these caravans so popular. It's a relaxed atmosphere, and sometimes the coach will just, instead of talking to a bunch of reporters with microphones, he feels more at ease to maybe give you a little bit more than he normally would. And that's good. There's optimism. There's expectation. There always should be expectation at LSU. Always. But it's a whole different vibe again. And all the vibe is of a positive nature. So you just got to take the good, take the bad, throw it all out, and move on. Oh, and a shout out. We talked about it yesterday briefly, but LSU Sam Nader inducted into the Fellowship of Christian Athletes Hall of Champions yesterday at Healing Place Church in Baton Rouge on Highland Road. He oversees all the day-to-day administrative duties for LSU football. He sets up all the recruiting visits and lines all that stuff up. He's been in the program for 40 years. Oh, Sam, write a book. But he won't. He'll never. He loves LSU too much. He would never do a tell-all story, even though he could make millions. He just won't do it. I know that. He's one of the nicest men you'll ever want to meet. One of the most respectful men you've ever want to meet. And he's just he's a treasure when it comes to LSU football. So congratulations, Dr. Sam Nader. Man, he's been around forever. Holy cow, forever and a day. All right, we'll take a time out here. When we come back, we'll talk all things Nollins. Saints getting ready to open up their rookie mini camp this weekend, the Pelicans, and even some rugby. It has taken Nollins by storm. Scott Alexander joins us next here on the Jordy Helper Show, brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. Major League Baseball games, no problem. NBA playoff games, we got it. Eat, drink, be happy, because that's what Hooters is all about. We'll be right back.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Hey, welcome back. Great to be with you. Wednesday edition of the Jordy Hultberg Show. 33 minutes after the hour. We all know what the largest sport in the world is. More people play this sport than any other sport. That's soccer, right? We all know that. Do you know what the second largest sport in the world is? You know? It's a sport of rugby. How about that? Now, my hometown, the Crescent City of New Orleans, has an NFL franchise in the Saints, obviously. It's got an NBA franchise in the Pelicans, obviously. It has a third major league sport as well, and that is the New Orleans Gold rugby team. They've got players from all over the world playing in New Orleans. Not only is the host of primetime sports on Cox Sports Television, but he is deeply involved in the New Orleans Gold. That's our good friend, the one and only Mr. Scott Alexander. Scott, rugby, how about that? How are you?
Shocking, isn't it? I'm doing fantastic, dude. Jordy, dude, I never had an idea about rugby until about 5 months ago. I mean, nothing. I got approached by the owner to call the game. And I said, absolutely not. I don't know anything about this sport. I'm not going to embarrass myself on because these games are on national TV. It's like, come on. So I got around it. I started watching scrimmages, and I was like, I still don't know it. I don't get this. And, man, it's like that light that light that goes on in your head and it clicks finally. Like, you're studying, for a test or a law school exam or something, and you finally get it. That's what happened, man, after the first month. I just got it. And now I'm addicted. I love it. I'm passionate about it, and I can't wait to see this league, which is already booming, grow even further. They added New York and Toronto this year. Next year it's Boston, Atlanta, and D.C., and after that it's going to be L.A., Chicago, and Dallas, and they've already got some great cities like Seattle and Houston and San Diego, yeah. and I could go on and on, but in Denver, but it's phenomenal, Jordy. It's a lot of fun.
If for the layman out there that has never watched it, I mean, rugby is like a semi-tackle football with no pads, but how would you basically describe it?
That's good. I liked it. You basically do have no pads, and you can't throw any forward passes. But the bottom line is this, man. They move the ball much like football without the breaks in the action. You know, you have to throw these. There's a lot of horizontal passes, you know, maybe a little bit kind of a lateral, but it's not like the sense that we think of a lateral where you're going back 5 yards on the pitch. These are literally like maybe a foot or two behind, and they're so fast and crisp. And just like football, you know, you have your big guys, which, you know, you're probably most people that don't know rugby, or they get a sense of what it might be. They think of the scrum. Most people know that term.
Right.
Those are the big guys that kind of control the scrum, which is what football derived after rugby, and that was the line of scrummaging. Mm-hmm. So, but you have your fast guys. You have your Reggie Bush types, you know. You got your Kevin Falk types for the LSU fans up there. You got those fast dudes, man, and they are fast, and they're quick, and they score. They call the touchdowns tries. It's the same thing, basically. Yeah. You just get one less point, and you get one more point for your conversions, which, by the way, are much tougher to get. So it's super exciting, man. And I cannot wait to watch the next game each and every week. And that's a fact. I never thought I would ever say that about the sport of rugby.
Wow.
But here I am. I'm into it.
There you are. Scott Alexander joining us. You've got a great matchup coming up. The number one team versus the number two team, the San Diego Legion. And there's a lot at stake on this one. Tell me when it is, where it is, and tell me all about it.
Tons at stake. I mean, listen, you got one versus two. The four games left in the season. You have a 16-game season. They're 9-3-1. They've had one extra game. We're 9-3. And the way this works is four of the nine teams that are in the league right now, like I said, they're going to be 12 next year and 16 the year after. But four of the nine go to the playoffs. And if you have, you know, whoever has the best record, much like if you're in the NBA or Major League Baseball, they're going to get home field advantage in the playoffs, and that's what we're fighting for. And we're not absolutely guaranteed to even be in the playoffs because there's six of the nine teams that are really kind of bunched up,
uh-huh.
and we have to win this. I mean, this is a big, big match. It's not like death knell if we don't, because they do have one more game played than us. But the fact is we play them today, and then the last game of the regular season is in San Diego. The week before that, it's at New York, another tough team who, by the way, beat us in a very close match. But we are right now the Saints of this league. They score a lot of points. The Nola Gold, like I said, has these incredible backs from all over the world, Australians, New Zealand, South Africans. You got some Bay Area guy. You got places from all. But this team has people from New Zealand, Uruguay, Chile, Canada. We have three World Cup players from there. It's just well-rounded with Americans, local guys, a couple from New Orleans, and then a bunch of international superstars.
What prompted ownership to pick the city of New Orleans for this?
One guy, Tim Falcon. He is a long time, Jordan. You probably remember those rugby dudes hanging out, you know, when you were playing basketball at LSU.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a big deal. The rugby club of LSU was huge. It was coached by a guy from South Africa who's here, and he kind of hangs out now. I mean, he lives back there. He actually worked with Mandela for years in the parliament there. But he and his son are very passionate fans of this team as well. But Tim Falcon played for them. He's a lawyer in New Orleans,
okay.
and he's a maritime lawyer. But he still plays. The dude's almost 60, and he looks like a Mack truck. I mean, he's like built. He's what you think of a rugby player when you think of the stereotype. But he wanted it badly, and he got with the other guys that formed this Major League Rugby team, and they have a vision and a plan. And listen, I was a skeptic. You know, listen, I was skeptical. I know the main sports, and I know what it is about. But I started seeing the whole thing come together, and I'm watching the big franchises come in, and the franchises keep getting more and more expensive. I'm like, whoa, this is only going upward, and we're going to be playing next year in Zephyr Stadium. I know that's going to be exciting, and the Baby Cakes, as you know, are going to Wichita.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a soccer and rugby stadium only. So it's going to be phenomenal.
That's great. That's great, because I didn't know what they were going to do with it. I thought maybe they were going to tear the thing down or something, but that is great news. How long does a rugby match take normally?
It's 80 minutes. It should take about 80 minutes of action, and it's about an hour 45 to 2 hours is the whole deal. We start usually about 10 after, 7 after the hour. It's a two-hour broadcast. Let's just say that.
Like soccer? You play 40 minutes, you take a break, you play 40 more minutes?
Yeah, soccer's 45 and rugby's 40, but yeah, same premise. You rarely stop the clock, only if there's a major injury or if there's a major penalty situation they're trying to hash out, but generally it's a running, continuous time thing, constant action. That's the one thing that hit me.
Yeah.
There's no stoppage for 40 seconds for the next football play. There's no free throws that stop the play. You might get the conversion extra point thing, but that's really the only time they can take a breather, and these guys are real men.
How do you get your commercial breaks in?
That's it. It's true, right? Huh? It's a hard thing to do. That's why we have the breaks at the beginning, at the end, and they do have a water break for a minute at the 20-minute and 60-minute mark, basically the midway of each half. And then by the way, we have a lot of commercials at the halftime.
as well you should. How is it catching on? What's been the fan response, and how is the fan base growing?
It's tripled from the beginning last season, before I knew much about it. And listen, the Baby Cakes, let me just say this, and I'm not here to dog the Baby Cakes, but that stadium they've been playing in, they've been averaging 500 people for the last dozen years. Yeah. We're on the West Bank right now, and you know it's the people, and I love the West Bank folks. These guys have been great. But it's hard to get people from uptown to come to the West Bank. And we're still getting 2,000, and we're going to get 3,000 this week for this big match. And just think about when we move across the river, I'm expecting 5,000 minimum per game, and it's going to grow to 10,000 within 2 or 3 years, I promise you. This thing is booming, and it's going fast and rapid. I mean, get aboard, because this gold train is humping down the avenue.
The gold. NOLA Gold. NOLA Gold. All right.
NOLA Gold.
Take care of business against that lovely town known as San Diego, and go from there. We got to talk about some other sports real quick, but I'm going to watch. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by this. Saints start their rookie mini camp this weekend. What's your big storyline this year, or is there one?
Well, it's revenge. I mean, it's just taking care of business. And remember last year they had the Minnesota Miracle to play off of. The Saints obviously have the biggest, worst non-call in the history of pro sports, period. It's still being made jokes of after the Kentucky Derby had the biggest disqualification. They said Twitter hit so hard about that disqualification, they said they had more references to the Saints thing that they've ever had from one sport to the other about how the Saints got robbed. So they're going to play off that. The Saints have basically everybody coming back, at least for this year, because next year is when you're going to have to start re-signing some superstars like Kamara and Michael Thomas. Mm-hmm. But right now, they're hungry, they're focused, and they picked up a couple extra pieces. You know, they traded that first-round pick, as you know, for Marcus Davenport, two first-rounders in the previous draft. So for what they had, Jordy, I thought they did phenomenal in this draft, getting Eric McCoy at center, arguably the best center in the draft, and you got, without question, one of the top three safeties, most say the second-best free safety in the fourth round in Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. So that's a huge pull to get that guy in the fourth. Yeah. I had him pegged mid to late second round at worst. So you pulled him in. I thought Eric McCoy was an early second rounder at worst, and you got him midway through that round. So fact is, I thought they filled a couple needs there. You got some great free agents coming in. They didn't need a whole lot, but they picked up, you know, obviously at tight end, getting Jared Cook was a big, big deal.
Huge.
Now you have a pass catcher, but yeah, I look for this season to be super exciting. It's going to be fun to be around the Saints.
Do you think they're done in free agency? I still think they need another wide receiver. Am I crazy?
I'm not saying you're crazy. That's always the possibility. They're going to give some guys every chance they can. I mean, Cameron Meredith is going to be – all eyes are on him because he came over. Curtis Johnson gave him the thumbs up because when he was healthy, which was admittedly not very long, but he played at a Pro Bowl level for those 12 games that he was healthy under Curtis Johnson. I mean, the guy was just catching everything. If you can get him to that place where he was, that's your first choice. But let me say this. You've got you talk about undrafted free agents. Little Jordan Humphrey from Texas. I'm going to tell you this. He's nothing little about him. He's big time. And I did a bunch of Texas games with Tim Brando this fall and the previous fall. And that guy was unstoppable. I mean, maybe because his 40 speed is not so great, but I remember a guy named Eric Martin whose 40 speed was like an ice wagon at 4'8", and still one of the greatest Saints receivers of all time. This guy catches everything, and I won't be surprised if he doesn't make the team and makes the splash. Now, if you're talking about take Traquan Smith, you know from first year to second year in the NFL particularly is your biggest jump. Traquan had that great, great game. I think he had two or three touchdown catches in that one game and really didn't do a whole lot the rest of the season. I speak of the third-round pick from UCF last season. I expect a big jump there. But the guy I want you to keep your eye on even more, you got glimpses of him last year, but the guy I really think is going to be big for the Saints is Keith Kirkwood. And this is a guy that the old light bulb came on with him sometime during training camp. He was making catches, and all of a sudden when he got his chance in some big games when people like Ted Ginn were hurt, he came through, and he did. So you have an explosive guy still in Gwynn, even though he's up in age. You got Kirkwood, you got Traquan Smith, and of course, Michael Thomas, one of the elite in the league. And now you add Jarrett Cook, who's basically a wide receiver. You know, they're going to see how this rolls out. And then hopefully little Jordan Humphrey can make a splash, too. But Kamara plays like a wide receiver a lot of times, too, the way he catches the ball. So I don't know if they're going to make a giant splash unless they get some kind of crazy deal on a player that at the end of his career, maybe they think they have some tread on the tire still.
Scott Alexander, host of Primetime Sports, and calls the New Orleans Gold rugby games on Cox Sports Television. Across the street, the Pelicans. We haven't really talked about them. David Griffin, so far so good, right?
Love him. You know, I was an agent for 10 years. I had some dealings with David Griffin. Always was impressed with his poise, with his intelligence, with his acumen, his NBA acumen. I can't say that about every GM that I've been around or whatever. I've seen him in an assistant role in the negotiating table. I've seen him in the head role negotiating table. He's very good. I mean, he's very, very, very smart and very good, and he's always got a plan. And sometimes these guys fly by the seat of their pants, not David Griffin. I was pleasantly surprised they were able to coax him. I know for a fact, being in the business for years, that he had about six other jobs that he either turned down or could have had in the past 3 years. And he was looking for the right opportunity for him and his family. And I went and talked to him at the press conference.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we did the old, I remember you, okay, and then we did that. And I'm like, and I watched his whole, the way he answered questions, looked everybody in the eye that asked the question. That to me is a pretty impressive trait. And he looked like he was only talking to you when he did it. And in front of everybody, and I just think that this guy is going to be big time for this team. Now, obviously, you can win the press conference, but you certainly got to win it after that. But round one is done. He won.
He survived round one. Now, Mike Tyson's coming out in round two. Can you go get players? That's the whole. There's no way Anthony Davis is coming back to the Pelicans. No way.
I mean, it could be subterfuge. I know some people will hold out hope, and I'll never say never, but I certainly would not bet my money on that. But you have to say those things, and I know he's going to try. I know for a fact that he's definitely – I mean, listen, I know he could be saying a lot of that to pump up the value for Anthony Davis, and, hey, we're not going to do this. You're going to have to really come to the table. That's a big part of it. But bottom line is, LA's a dumpster fire now. I mean, where everybody thinks he's going to go, do you really want to do that? And now you're seeing all these other teams like the Portlands and Denvers, who maybe be bigger markets than yourself, but you've seen some success there, and you've seen that they can do it in other places. San Antonio's done. I mean, this guy's if anybody can sell him, because he did win a title with LeBron. Now you can say anybody could have won a title with LeBron, but not everybody has, and he did win one. And he went to three straight finals. So my fact is, I would put that at about 10% that he stays.
Who's got the best chance? I mean, because look, Kyrie Irving's gone from Boston. He's not coming back. And so does Boston take a one-year flyer on Anthony Davis? Because I'm not thrilled about the Laker players. I don't want that bunch. Who's going to get this guy? And what are the Pels going to get back?
Well, they're going to get a lot back. He's not going to give them away. They're going to get a lot back. And obviously Boston, they're going to know they have to make some sort of splash And I think the best thing for the Pels is that Jason Tatum has not looked good, particularly in this past series. But I can tell you for a fact, Jason Tatum's very good. He's not Anthony Davis. Let's be real. You're not going to get complete value for a player like that. But if you can get Tatum and two of their first-round picks, which they aren't great, admittedly. Come on, they're mid-rounds, first through first round. But if you have Tatum locked up for a couple more years. So I don't mind that. And be aware of one thing that always happens in situations like this, particularly when teams are working with a guy with 1 year left on their contract. Three-way trades become much more prevalent then. And I don't know why, but if you go back in history and look at the teams with 1 year, when guys are getting unloaded with 1 year left.
Right.
Like Chris Paul, good example. I haven't even thought of this. Chris Paul's one of them. Remember they made all these three-way deals? First it was with the Lakers and Rockets, and then it became with the Clippers. The fact is like those will be in action. And speaking of the Clippers, that is a team, by the way. We know AD likes L.A. He's got a home there. If things don't work out maybe with the Lakers, and I agree with you, I don't like the slop they're given. Those are just guys to me.
Yeah.
The Clippers, on the other hand, they got some guys I like. And that might be a under-the-radar team that you might see some action with. Because I know Doc Rivers would salivate at having Anthony Davis and would probably give whatever it took.
I want the Knicks to win the lottery pick, and I want them to trade the number one pick to get Anthony Davis and give me Zion, and let's fill that building and let's build around it. That's what I would do.
Go better. Let's go ahead and win. Let's go ahead and let win the first pick, and then because that lottery's coming up this week, right?
Yep. 14th.
Let's win that one, and then we'll trade whoever has the second pick, and we'll take both the Duke guys and roll, or take Ja Morant, whatever. And then
that's
start
what I'm
the
talking
team
about.
Right there.
That's what I'm talking about. All right, the NOLA Gold Rugby, that's the hot ticket in town this time of the year. Scott Alexander, thank you, my friend.
Hey,
always fun.
NOLAGoldRugby.com. If y'all want to make it over from Lafayette, Baton Rouge, come on down. This is the hot ticket. It's going to be 2 o'clock on Saturday. Or call 50-RUGBY, 504-50-RUGBY, brother.
There you go. Check's in the mail to me. Goodbye. Take it easy. We'll be back. Stay with me.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, we went a little long there with Mr. Alexander, but that was fun. So let me just wrap up hour number one by saying the Denver Nuggets took a 3-2 lead over Portland, 124-98, a blowout. It was a bad night of basketball last night if you like close games. But if you're a fan of the Nuggets and the Toronto Raptors, you're happy because the Raptors plummaged the Philadelphia 76ers, 125-89. So Toronto and Denver lead their series 3-2. Today, another doubleheader. Milwaukee looks to close out the Boston Celtics. Game number 5 with Milwaukee leading 3-1. That game in Milwaukee tonight. And game 5, the scene shifts back to Oracle Arena in Oakland as the Warriors host the Rockets. And that series is tied at 2-apiece. Busy second hour coming your way. Fun one. We'll have our Hot Topics segment. We'll talk about a father-daughter combination, carry on the legacy in the LSU athletic department, and Tom Amos talks about a life-changing moment on Friday as he trained the winner of the Kentucky Oaks. Hour number 2 coming your way next.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Well, good afternoon again, Acadiana, and wherever you may be listening to 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. It is great to be with you. It is Wednesday, May the 8th, the year 2019. My main man, CD, taking care of business, as he always does, and professionally each and every day. Yours truly here, Studio 1A. We got a busy second hour planned for you and yours. Jeff Wickersham, former LSU quarterback, now has a daughter who is being recognized as one of the best in softball at LSU. She's a freshman All-SEC performer as the softball team heading to Texas A&M for the SEC softball tournament. We'll catch up with Jeff Wickersham at around 3:15 this afternoon, and then Tom Amos will join us, a trainer, horse trainer, born in New Orleans, went to school at LSU, and now training horses at in Louisville. His filly, Serengeti Empress, just won the Kentucky Oaks, a life-changing moment for him. We'll catch up with Tom Amos in the paddocked area at Churchill Downs at around 3:30 this afternoon. But first and foremost, as we do each and every day, we find out what's going on in the world of sports. We call it our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, Clint, we've got, wasn't a good night for basketball, was an awful night for LSU baseball. My goodness gracious. Let's just flush those things out of the way and move on. How are you, my friend?
Exactly, Jordy. Definitely we need to kind of flush the commode there, if you will. And that's kind of where I want to start off here, Jordy. What's the bigger issue for LSU right now as we near the tail end of the season? Is it injuries to the pitching staff? Or I know the morning guys, RP3 and company, they talked about a little bit. Possibly a lack of leadership.
I think they got to get tougher. I think they got to get angrier, tougher. Play like every game is important, which it is. When Josh Smith comes out and says, we came out sluggish, we didn't come out ready to play. Well, that's baloney. That's unacceptable. You got to get some guys in there with some heart, some attitude, that value that uniform that they're wearing and who they're playing for. So you can call it lack of leadership. You can call it a bunch of stuff. They just got to find some heart and get angry and play aggressively. And that's what it comes down to. It's got to matter. And right now, it just doesn't seem like it matters to them.
It's an uphill climb right now, Jordy. If you're LSU, as you near the tail end of the season, you need to be able to take care of business the next 2 weeks against Arkansas and Auburn. They've done it in the past. This is going to be a huge test for them. Moving over to LSU basketball for a moment, Jordy. Good news coming out of there. And it feels like it's the first time in a while we've heard that, with Tremont Waters and Naz Reid being invited to participate in the draft combine next Thursday. Both of them get drafted in a few weeks' time?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. Normally you get invited there, that means an awful lot. But, man, I'm going to say yes, they both get drafted. Both second rounders, okay. Both probably late second rounders. Yes,
man.
Fingers crossed for both of them.
And I think Nas could wind up being a late first rounder in my mind because he's such a great talent. It's all about what he does in that combine. I feel like they could wind up putting him over the top and be able to get into that very late first round.
Okay, well, that would be great for him. I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
And we're talking about the NBA draft, excuse me. No other Tigers were even invited to the G League combine, which makes me wonder, Jordy. A lot of these guys are returning,
right?
They'll
be back. They'll be back. No question. Emmett Williams will be back. Skylar Mays will be back. Marlon Taylor will be back. No question. They'll be back. Yes.
All right, Jordy, hopping over to the world of MLB last night. Obviously, wasn't a good night for the Astros, but I'll say this. A former Astro had one heck of
a
very late night, second career no-hitter, Jordy. Mike Fiers getting it done very late at night. I want to be able to catch the bottom of the ninth on.
Did you?
Yeah, I was able to catch the bottom of the ninth. Wound up listening to it on the radio. My goodness, it was just phenomenal to hear that final out. But it got me thinking, Jordy. This was the 300th no hitter in MLB history. Obviously, I think the perfect game. It's so unattainable nowadays. But is this the greatest feat in all of sports? Getting multiple no nos in your career?
It's pretty darn good. Yeah. I mean, Nolan Ryan had 7. He's the most ever. Sandy Koufax had 4. He's second most. Those are two first ballot Hall of Famers in their time. It's amazing. He got one as an Astro. He got how the Astros let him go? He got one in Oakland.
Right after that no hitter, he kind of started allowing a lot of home runs, Jordy. If you kind of look at his stat line.
Yeah, I understand. See, that's my whole point with LSU baseball. You don't expect this guy to get a no-hitter.
Yeah.
It just takes one guy to have one of those kind of games. I'm not talking about a no-hitter, but give me seven innings, Hilliard, and give up one run.
A quality start.
Yeah, a quality start. That's all they need to turn this thing around. But good for him getting another a no-hitter. He did walk some people, had some, as in every game, you always have some great defensive plays to help you out. Good for him, man. That's awesome. Number 300. Wow.
It's amazing. When I looked at that stat, 300 all-time, I believe it's in like the 40s or so, if I'm not mistaken, of the number of players in the Major League Baseball history books that have multiple no-hitters, and only I think seven of them have done it with multiple teams. Mike Fiers puts himself in that list. But, Jordy, I got to have a little fun here. Uh-oh. Because I saw this pop up earlier today. I knew it was right up your alley. Your buddy Nick Saban, the Nick-tator, was on radio in WJOX, Alabama, sports talk radio, and he actually talked a little bit about Game of Thrones. He's a big fan, Jordy, of course, makes sense.
Well, of course.
And he talked in detail about the series finale.
Uh-oh, and he made a prediction?
He made a prediction, Jordy. He made a predict. He was definitely hemming and hawing, but his big thing was saying that he thinks in some kind of way Jon Snow is going to wiggle his way in there, even though he won't try. It'll just end up that way. You think that prediction holds up in, what is it, 2 weeks' time?
He is the rightful heir to the throne. I'm not going to give any predictions away. No, no way.
Seen the leaked videos?
I have not seen the leaked videos. I've seen a coffee, Starbucks coffee cup. That's all I've seen. No, I've got no inside information. I don't want inside. I want to see how it all pans out. But good for Nick. See?
That was awesome.
He is human. He does watch TV. He's not constantly watching game film of LSU so he can keep that streak alive. No, he watches shows. Good for him.
He's not watching game film. He's just watching Game of Thrones. I think that's the way it needs to be. And it makes sense, though, Jordy. He feels like, all right, we're going to have fun. We're going to have some more fun with this, Jordy.
All right.
You've watched more Game of Thrones than I have, which is not saying much. Nope. But, Jordy, my question to you is, what character would Nick Saban be in Game of Thrones?
Oh, my gosh. Probably Cersei. Probably the woman. Evil. Evil empress. Evil. Nobody likes him. Everybody hates her. So that would be Saban. He'd be Cersei. That's funny. He watches the Weather Channel in his office all day long. And I guess on Sunday nights, he takes a break and sits down with Miss Terry, and they watch Game of Thrones. Good for him.
I feel like he has the Weather Channel on just to hide whenever somebody walks in, just has it on.
Yeah.
But whenever they walk out, he just immediately closes the door. It's soundproofed to where you can watch, Game of Thrones and all that stuff.
That's what he wants you to believe. He wants you to believe he's just watching the Weather Channel. See, he's got that persona about him. He's outworking everybody. Nobody gives Ed Orgeron a lot of credit, but Ed Orgeron's in the hallways of the football stadium where they're all right now till they finish up their football complex with all the renovations. And he's going through plays with graduate assistants on a day off. And he says, never a day off. So Coach O doesn't get enough credit. He's working all the time as well. So just beat him on the field, O. Beat him on the field one time, and you'll be the king of Louisiana.
You'll be sitting on that iron throne there, Jordy.
That's right. Good job. For a guy that doesn't watch it, you know it.
Hey, I learned by proxy, Jordy.
There you go. You're smart, man. I'm glad you're on my team. Son of a gun. I like it. All right, there's your hot topics for the day. Nick Saban, Jon Snow. Really? All right, we'll see. Brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce on the planet every day. The Biart family for nearly 90 years, nearly nine decades, putting out the same great product consistently. Finest spices, finest peppers, secret ingredients, voila, Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Catch up with a former LSU quarterback whose daughter probably is a better athlete next.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holford Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome always a thrill to talk to guys back in the day. And back in the day, this was one of the most highly recruited quarterbacks in the country, coming out of the state of Florida, decided to come to LSU. And it was LSU's good fortune that he did, because he was a terrific player. Sat one season behind Alan Richter, and then was the quarterback for three straight seasons. And he was the first quarterback in LSU history to pass for over 5,000 career yards. The first in LSU history to throw for over 2,000 yards in three different seasons. To throw for over 2,500 yards in a season. And to throw for over 350 yards in the game. He was good. He was really good. Number five. The question is, though, who's better, he or his daughter? Old number five, Jeff Wickersham, kind enough to join us. Old timer, and I say that because I'm the same way. Great to catch up with you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's nice to talk with you, sir.
It's always a pleasure. Those LSU football days, man, what do you remember the most about them?
I tell you, probably just the fan base that we had there. It was absolutely unbelievable to come out of that shoot and feel the electricity in the air, all the crazy Cajuns going wild. Win, lose, or draw, they were there for every game and showed tremendous enthusiasm. Just the absolute best place to play in the country.
Describe the highs and the lows and the pressures involved with being a starting quarterback at a place like you just mentioned, where the fans are so exuberant, so into it, so it's such a part of their lives. What was it like being that quarterback for that team and that fan base?
It was a tremendous honor. I took it very seriously. It was also very humbling. You could go out and have a great game, throw for 300 yards, just play top of your game and mm-hmm. really look like, a superstar. And then the very next week you could be humbled, throwing a couple interceptions and basically yeah. losing the game for you. But I always do remember that, the fans could be very tough on you, but they were always very forgiving, and they were always there, which was very important to me. Win, lose, or draw, they were going to be there either supporting you or booing you. And that was okay, because that's all you want. You want to have your fans in the game every time and have them show up every weekend, which they always did.
That's awesome. Who else did it come get you from? Merritt Island, Florida, which is on the, if I remember correctly, like the Atlantic Coast east side of Orlando. Why LSU, when I know there was a plethora of other schools out there going for you?
It was. We were located on the East Coast, and Mac Brown was a big factor. And then, of course, Jerry Stovall was the head coach who I really admired and thought a lot of. But actually, it was the fans. We used to go watch the Tangerine Bowl all the time when I was younger. And fortunately, LSU played in those games, a couple of them. And we would be walking around as kids, before the game in the parking lot and seeing the crazy Cajuns out there cooking gumbo, jambalaya, which we had never seen or heard of before. And they were always so inviting. Hey, come on over here, have some gumbo, have some, this. And they were wild and crazy. And I told myself then, I think I was about 12 or 13 years old, if I ever get a chance to go to Louisiana State, I'm going to do it, because I love the fans and I love how accommodating and how nice they were to us, even as little kids that had nothing to do with LSU.
Man, what a great story. Jeff Wickersham, kind enough to join us. Okay, the question I said leading into this was, who's better? Who's the better athlete, dad or daughter, Shelby, who just earned a spot on the freshman All-SEC softball team as she's playing for Beth Tarina? I think that's every dad who was an athlete's dream, is to be able to watch one of their children or all of their children participate at the same level and beyond than what you did. What kind of a thrill is it for you, albeit softball, watching your daughter perform and have such great success?
Well, I'll answer your first question first. Obviously, Shelby's a much better athlete than I ever was. I never made an All-SEC team or accomplished anything near what she has. So I would have to say her for sure on that end. Your second question, and it really is, I spoke with Coach Beth earlier in the season about it after the first time I saw her go out and pitch. It's an unbelievable, almost surreal type feeling to see your own kid out there on the mound wearing the purple and gold and playing a collegiate sport. And so I'm so thankful to Coach Beth, to all her teammates and the other coaches who've made it possible. It's really a humbling and an exceptional experience. I even told Coach Beth, I hope you get to experience this one day. It's truly, truly an honor and one of the highlights of my life to watch her go out and compete.
Is it more nerve-wracking for you being under center and one of those Alabama linebackers has got smoke come out of his mouth and you know he's coming to blitz you and trying to take your head off? Or is it more frightful seeing your daughter pitching where you really have no control over anything?
Yeah, it really is. It's more frightful to watch her pitch. I enjoy it. I love it more than anything. And then I also don't love it more than anything because there's nowhere to hide on the mound. You know,
yeah.
I could mess up a play in football and nobody ever really know about it unless it was an interception. Every pitch she throws, if there's a mistake or it wasn't executed in the right manner. So it is nerve-wracking for me, but boy, do I love it. I love seeing her compete, and I love seeing her, work with the other girls. They're such a talented group. They've made her look so good in so many games this year that she probably didn't pitch as well as she could have, but they make up for it. They're bashing home runs. They're making unbelievable plays in the field. So they've really, really helped her come along, and it's just been a lot of fun to watch.
There are a lot of parents out there that are listening with young athletes. I'm curious how you went about handling your daughter, and you have some other children as well who are athletes. What was your advice to them? How did you handle, obviously, a talented young lady who kept getting better and better and better in schools? Or how did you handle that whole situation as a parent?
It was a fun situation, a fun thing to go through. I basically let Shelby, make her own decisions. I didn't really push her super hard into sports. I let her make her own decisions. I thought it was important she play other sports also growing up. So she got a taste of volleyball. She got a taste of, basically every other sport there was. And then as she got into high school, she kind of settled in on one sport. And she started taking lessons from a pitching coach who was really well thought of in our area, a guy named Matt Dulay. Helped her out tremendously. But basically let her chart her own course and kind of fall into what she felt most comfortable with. And fortunately for us, it was softball, and she's ended up making, I think, a lot of good decisions as far as who she took lessons from, how she went after it. And, they recruited her pretty early in the process. Mm-hmm. So we were very fortunate that she was committed in ninth grade and knew where she wanted to go and knew what she wanted to do. And then, we were able to kind of chart her course on that path, knowing that she's already going here and taking a lot of advice from people who are a heck of a lot smarter than me on what it would take to be a successful college player. So we've had a lot of help from other people, and it just seemed to work. Things just seemed to work out right. And thank goodness she went to LSU instead of Alabama, or I would never live that
Woo! Day. Jeff, we wouldn't be talking right now, buddy. I'm sorry. I'd have to disown you. But how does it feel to get a pay raise? You're paying that Mount Carmel High School tuition, and now you got no tuition. How about that?
Oh, is that nice? We went from that, and of course I have two others now in Catholic schools in New Orleans, so I'm still paying those. But yeah, it's very nice. It's a welcome relief.
Ah, goodness gracious. Jeff Wickersham, kind enough to us. Are you heading to College Station for the SEC tournament?
Yes, sir. We'll be taking off early tomorrow morning and wishing the Tigers a whole bunch of luck. Hopefully they come out of there with a championship.
That is unbelievable. All right, back to you, because we got to brag on you a little bit more. You saw some of the really good times at LSU. You went through some bad. You went to three bowl games, though. I mean, what was that one moment that you, if somebody said, Jeff, what game do you remember the most and why?
It was probably my freshman year. We played Florida State to see who would go to the Orange Bowl.
Yes.
That was probably the most memorable game I had at LSU. Although I've had a lot of really good ones and great memories. But I was a freshman, so I was wide-eyed. I actually got in at the end of the game and actually did a bootleg play I probably shouldn't have and scored a touchdown. We were trying to kill the clock.
I remember.
And I just kept, Yeah, I just kept it, which Coach Mack about lost it on me, and took it around the end and jumped in the end zone, and then all the oranges came raining down. And it was just something. It was crazy because there was a lot of fog.
Yes.
Who went to the big game, and then every time we scored, there was thousands of oranges that were hitting the field. So it was a tremendous experience that I'll never forget.
Let's come fast forward now. It's just for all those that remember you, and there's a lot of them. Tell everybody what Jeff Wickersham does for a daily business.
I got into started a business in '92 where we mainly import a lot of hoses and hose assemblies for the industrial sector, and we have a location in Houston, Mobile, Alabama, and then one in Metairie. So I'm importing and distributing a lot of hose and hose assemblies to the different industrial sectors. It's been a great business and loving awesome. Every day.
That is awesome. Well, I cannot thank you enough for your time. Thanks for all the great memories of your time at LSU, and thanks for sending your daughter to LSU to continue the Wickersham way of going about things, winners across the board. So good luck. Congratulations on your accomplishments, her accomplishments, and I know who runs the show. Mom runs the show, so she's the one we should have been talking to, but what the heck, we'll settle for you. How about that?
You're absolutely correct in every respect. It's been a humbling and great experience for everybody in the Wickersham family, and we thank you for your support.
All right, Jeff. Thank you, buddy. You take care. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, you too.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfberg Show. What a great story.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And welcome back. I have been looking forward to this opportunity now for some time. I love it when one of ours reaches the success that they reach. And last Friday at Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky, one of ours, Tom Amos, trained the winner, Serengeti Empress, to the Kentucky Oaks title. Great, great job. And Tom Amos from in Louisville, as we speak, kind enough to join us today to talk about it. Tom, hey, from one New Orleanian to another, man, congratulations. Has it sunk in yet for you?
Oh, God. First of all, thank you, Jordy. It's an honor to be on the show with you. You know, we were in school at the same time. I'm not going to tell anybody when that was, but we're going back to the Rudy Macklin days, Dwayne Scales, all those great players you played with.
Those were some great memories. We did the fraternity system. You were a Sigma Nu. I was a Sigma Chi. All that fun stuff. But I'm so happy for you. I mean, what does winning the Kentucky Oaks mean to you?
So I've always known I was going to be a horse trainer, even when I was growing up in New Orleans as a kid. And I started my first job on the racetrack. I was 15 years old, just worked Christmas holidays, and I did that. And I did it when I was in college. I was working up in Shreveport, which is where the racing was during the summer between years at LSU. And I've been training since 1987. The Kentucky Oaks is the girls' version of the Kentucky Derby.
Correct.
To win that race, which is the most prestigious race there is for the three-year-old fillies in the United States, I just feel so blessed to have a talent like I had in my barn. She's a heck of an athlete. My mom and dad, they're 93 and 94 years old, and they were watching at home on TV. So I got to do it in front of them. And both of my daughters, both LSU graduates, by the way, my oldest daughter, Ashley, who graduated back in 2013, and she now works for the Saints and the Pelicans. She's their videographer. Oh. And then her younger sister, Haley, who graduated in 2015, they were both up here with me. And it was, and of course, my wife, who I met at LSU, Colleen, was here as well. So it just so much of it,
That's
and
awesome.
So much of where I am now goes back to my days at LSU. I grew up at LSU. I grew up in that fraternity as a Sigma Nu and had some leadership roles there. And I still go back to LSU all the time, watch a number of football games. I was fortunate enough to see us beat Tennessee in basketball this year. That was fantastic.
There you go.
Look, it all leads back to LSU. And I'm, you know, look, as the slogan says, forever LSU. And that's me. And that's my family.
Is this, Tom, is this a validation for your career, that win on Friday?
It is, Jordy. That's well put. So I've won over 3,500 races in my career, which is a lot of races. And I've won a lot of big races. But I've never won a race like the Kentucky Oaks. So, you know, my name, and really the stable's name, because it's more than just me, will go down in the record books. And it'll be awesome. What I'm remembered by until I win my Kentucky Derby. And when that happens, it'll be something for sure.
That's awesome. Tom Amos, kind enough to join us. You got involved with, some yearling sales several years ago. And what caught your eye about Serengeti Empress when so many others turned their eye away from her?
So this is a yearling sale. These horses have never had a saddle on their back, and it's the most popular yearling sale that they have in the United States. They'll sell almost 4,000 yearlings at this sale. And the prices range from $1,000 all the way up to multi-millions of dollars. And as the sale progresses, the quality of pedigree, meaning the family lineage, as well as the confirmation or what the sales company sees as the most perfect confirmation, will diminish each day. Serengeti Empress was towards the middle of the sale, and she was a beautiful yearling filly, but her pedigree, she was by a relatively unknown sire who had not accomplished much, and it was all athleticism. And I think that's why she was overlooked, because she wasn't very athletic looking. So when she went to the ring, we paid $70,000 for her. With her win in the Kentucky Oaks, and that win alone, she made $725,000. She became over a millionaire in earnings. And because she still got racing left, as well as she's going to be a mama of horses one day, her value is now at about anywhere from $4 to $5 million.
I guess you'll be getting a Christmas present from the owner, Joel Politi, won't you?
A Christmas present from Joel Politi and a Christmas present from the breeders
at
Pinhook Farm, who bred Serengeti Empress, because it not only validates the trainer, it validates the breeder as well. And it validates the jockey. And look, it's contagious, obviously, to all the connections.
Well, you went to the front of the race and stayed that way. I thought there was a late charge coming, and then all of a sudden, Serengeti Empress just, as our good friend Emeril Lagasse would say, kicked it up a notch and pulled away. When did you know you had it in control?
About 40 yards from the wire. And remember, we're going a mile and an eighth in distance, so 40 yards is very late in the race. But just as you said, Jordy, she took on a challenge from another filly that almost got right next to her late in the race, and Serengeti Empress caught that horse out of the corner of her eye, and when she saw her, she took off again. And as soon as she did that, that was a great feeling.
Excuse the ignorant question here, but I know the winner of the Kentucky Derby tries to move on to win a Triple Crown. Is there a Triple Crown for fillies?
There is a Triple Crown for fillies. It's a little bit more obscure. The next start for Serengeti Empress will be in June at Belmont Park, and she'll run in what's the equivalent of the Belmont Stakes for fillies.
Okay.
So that'll be her next start sometime early June.
That is awesome. Back to the Derby, I've got to ask you as a trainer, did they get this? Did they do the right thing? Did they get it right?
They got it right, Jordy. Here's the situation. The Derby is a 20-horse field. And
is that too many?
I don't think so. But having said that, through the years, the fouls that have occurred have been kind of I'll compare it to a basketball game. They let them play. So it's a very physical race.
Right.
And they let a lot of things go. But as time has gone on, you know, racing has changed. And things that they wouldn't call a foul on, that are technically they are a foul, nowadays, 2019, they're calling those fouls. So, look, I mean, 15 years ago in the NFL, you could hit a defenseless player, and it wasn't a penalty. But now it's 2019, you can't do that anymore in the NFL. And so with horse racing, we're also evolving into trying to be a safer and more protected sport. In the Kentucky Derby, you had the lead horse move over abruptly two pass, not the fault of the rider. Something spooked that horse. And when he did, he caused a chain reaction of problems. And that's a penalty. He comes down, absolutely.
Okay. What does it mean for horse racing now that Country House is not going to run in the Preakness, so there is no chance for the potential of a Triple Crown winner, which is, of course, what everybody wants to see?
That's a good question. It's a big disappointment, and I'm sure that the racing officials at Pimlico, where they hold the Preakness, are scrambling to try to get the best deal they can. I'm sure they're trying to get Maximum Security, who won the Derby and was taken down, the horse that caused the penalty, and has said, we're not running, which I think is a little bit of just sour grapes. I'm sure they're doing everything they can to get that horse. But look, it's in no way is it any good, and it's a shame because with all the controversy that occurred this past week in the Kentucky Derby, you're talking about a situation where President Trump tweeted on it. The national media, every channel's talking about it. So racing is getting a lot of attention, and it's actually pretty good attention.
Yes.
And, you know, with this to follow it up is disappointing because I'm sure everyone would have loved to see a rematch.
So, Tom, when the dust settled and the crowd noise went away and it was time for you and your loved ones to get together, how did you celebrate winning the Kentucky Oaks? Tell me the place to go in church in Louisville.
Well, we started at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse for dinner.
About
25 of us, including some locals that you know. Mentioned one because he's notorious. Chris Ewing was with us.
Oh, my gosh.
So we started at Chris's Steakhouse, and then we took the celebration to another restaurant. And, Jordy, remember when we were at school, and it would be 2 o'clock in the morning, and they'd flash the lights in the bar, and it was time to go home?
Yes.
That's the last time that I was out, as late as I was out, after the Kentucky Oaks.
Earned it. Deserved it. Well done. Hey, they always talk about it, but how did Serengeti Empress, how'd she do after the race? How's her health?
Her health is great. Tired? Yes. I'm not sure who was more tired, me or her, but we did a lot of laying down the next day, but we're both good now.
So, okay, so that's done and over with, right? So what have you done for me lately? So give me a day for Tom Amos. What are you doing these days? What's up next?
Well, the job is got a lot of routine to it, as most jobs do. So I'm out there every morning working with my stable, which is a big group of horses, and pointing to different races depending on talent level.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly walking on cloud nine, Jordy. I mean, this is it's a big thrill for me. What we accomplish as a stable in our industry, it's like winning the Super Bowl. So it's a very, very big deal within our industry.
That is awesome. Now, look, you got a great eye at that yearling sale, so let's go find you a thoroughbred on the male side, and let's go, man. Let's go.
Only if you promise to give me another call after the Derby next year.
Oh, I'm calling you before the Derby, and I'm going to the Derby. How about that?
I like that. You said, hold on, my number. You should have called me before the Oaks. Serengeti Empress paid $28 for every $2 bet.
Wow. Wow. I'm so happy for you, man. With the whole city, the whole state, so happy for you. Man, congratulations. And, you know, you've been in the business a long, long time. Bigger and better things are coming your way. I have no doubt about it. Can't wait to see you put that garland of roses over whatever horse you find one of these days soon, man. But congratulations and thank you. Thank you for coming on. We greatly appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. I said it earlier to my wife. What an honor. I've got so many friends in Baton Rouge, too many to mention right now, but I know they'll be listening, and I'm just really, really proud to be part of the show.
All right, Tom. Thank you, buddy. When I call you now, I want good tickets, okay?
I hear you loud and clear.
All right, brother. Go enjoy. Thank you so much. There's Tom Amos with Serengeti Empress, the winner of the Kentucky Oaks. I love it when one of us, one Louisianian, accomplishes great things, and he did. That's super. We'll be back. We're talking all things Nollins, including rugby. Huge, huge match this weekend. Next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome you back. How much fun was that? How good of a guy is Tom Amos? That was great. So was Jeff Wickersham. My goodness. That's awesome. Awesome. All right, we're back. Closing out this hump day edition, rain everywhere. Let's go away. We got a lot of teams getting ready for the state championships in baseball. In Sulphur, so let's hope that the weather gets out and those kids can go after their dreams. So we'll see. Tomorrow we'll have Bill Franquez on, as LSU baseball is en route to Arkansas as we speak, to Fayetteville, and the weather doesn't look promising there as well. So we'll see what happens along those lines, but this baseball team is struggling to say the very, very least. Very least. So we'll see how this team responds, how it reacts, and we'll go from there. As far as the pitching matchups, LSU's going to go with Mikhail Hilliard in game one. Going to go with Eric Walker in game two and then Landon Marceau in game three. They have no choice. That's all they've got. That's all they've got. So they're going up against some formidable pitchers across the board. Arkansas is outstanding. Outstanding. And they've got a lot of, they do a lot of everything the right way. Number three in the SEC in team batting average. Number seven in the SEC in team ERA. So they're not off the charts great, but they're just consistently good. So, I mean, something's amiss. Something is amiss with this baseball. I don't know what it is. And, you know, I love Paul to death. I love him. Great guy. Good, great coach. He really is. But you got to crack the whip. You're too nice. Too nice. If I had been on a team coached by Dale Brown and we got beat like that to an in-state team, the way Louisiana Tech put it on LSU last night, oh, we'd have been running. We'd clear the gym, get all the custodians out, and we're running. We're running until we're throwing up. Plain and simple. That's unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. So we'll see what they can do in Arkansas. It's not going to be easy, and there's not much margin for error. But all it takes is like the pitcher from the Oakland A's last night. Just takes one guy having the game, shutting the team down, giving you seven innings. Then you go to your bullpen, you close it out. It takes one guy. Then all of a sudden, it's amazing how that thing snowballs and rolls. Just takes one guy. We'll see. We'll see. All right, time for our daily history lesson. May the 8th, we go back to 1970. It's a beleaguered franchise now, but back then, the New York Knicks were pretty good. Walt Frazier, Earl the Pearl Monroe, Dave Barnett, Dave DeBuscher, Dollar Bill Bradley. Oh, they were some kind of good. Well, it was Game 7 of the NBA Finals. The Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor-led Los Angeles Lakers returned to Madison Square Garden for Game 7. The Knicks didn't know if Willis Reed would play or not. Teams were warming up. The captain wasn't out there. Then all of a sudden, a roar comes over the Garden as Willis Reed walks out of the locker room, steps on the court, takes a couple of practice shots. They tip it off. He gets a good defensive play against Wilt on the opening possession. Then they come down the floor. Walt Frazier finds Willis Reed at the free throw line, and on gimpy leg and all, Willis Reed knocks down his first shot. He come back down the second time, knocked down his second, and the New York Knicks went on to win Game 7, stunning the Lakers, blew them out of the gym as Willis Reed, the captain. His emotional return inspired the fans, who in turn inspired the New York Knicks. On this day, May the 8th, 1970. Now the Knicks are just hoping for the number one draft pick and to get Kevin Durant. And then hopefully the Knicks will trade that number one pick to the Pelicans for Anthony Davis, and the Pels can get Zion Williamson. How about that? That's what I'm hoping for. Yes, indeed. All right, birthday wishes. If today, May the 8th, is your special day, man, we wish you nothing but the best. And you share it with the likes of some pretty good former LSU players. On the basketball side, my good friend of the program, Garrett Temple, just finishing up with the LA Clippers, celebrating a birthday today. Ah, he's terrific. He's terrific. On the football side of things, the mailman's son, KJ Malone, celebrating a birthday today, as is former defensive lineman Drake Nevis, and our good friend of the program, fourth down against Florida, time and time again, they called his number, Jacob Hester, celebrating a birthday today. So happy birthday to them. Happy birthday to you. Man, go enjoy it. And if it's your anniversary, man, happy anniversary from all of us to all of you. Special thanks to our guests today, Scott Alexander. Who'd have thunk rugby would be such a big draw now? But it is, and they're doing it up big in Nolens. Jeff Wickersham sharing his thoughts or his memories as an LSU quarterback, and now watching his daughter perform so well for the LSU softball team. What a great story. And Tom Amos, just one of the best guys in the thoroughbred racing industry. Serengeti Empress, the winner of the Kentucky Oaks and the signature crowning glory to a wonderful, wonderful career. All he wants now is a chance at the Derby. Yes, indeed. All right, tomorrow we'll preview LSU-Arkansas baseball with Bill Franquez, and whatever else comes down the pipeline, we'll figure it all out. CD, outstanding job as always, my friend. Thanks to all of you for listening in. If you have any comments, you can always email me, askjordy, J-O-R-D-Y, at gmail.com. We ask you to follow us on Twitter, at JHS, Jordy Helpert Show, 1037. All right? At JHS 1037. And we appreciate all the feedback. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Until tomorrow. I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Left.